program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Phoenix Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 166. Be on the lookout for a gang of safe blowers known to be operating in this district. Pick up any suspicious characters seen loitering near large stores. That's all.
Taken the part of a police officer in a great many of these broadcasts, and have heard me tell time after time about our sponsor's products. What stands out most prominently in your mind about Rio Grande cracked gasoline?
Rio Grande cracked gasoline powers more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment than any other brand.
That is to say, in the Rio Grande territory.
Yes.
Mr. McNear, you've got a detective's memory for details. Do you recall some of the cities that have used Rio Grande cracked gasoline?
Well, Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, Fresno, Santa Barbara, San Diego, and last week you mentioned three new ones. Pasadena, Phoenix, and another town up north, one of Mark Twain's towns. Marysville, is that right?
That's right. And the counties?
Oh, yes. Maricopa County, Arizona.
Good. We mustn't forget Maricopa County, Arizona. Its sheriff's cars serve a third of the total population of Arizona. And then there's Santa Barbara County, Orange County, San Diego County, and many, many others. Mr. Lewis?
Well, Rio Grande cracked gasoline gives police car performance in any car.
Right. There's one more thing you gentlemen might have mentioned. The patented Sinclair cracking process. Rio Grande cracked gasoline is the only gasoline you can buy that is refined for this famous process. It breaks up gasoline into finer atoms, makes it burn more readily, more completely. The Sinclair cracking process is the reason for police car performance. It is the reason for Rio Grande's popularity among city and county officials. To our listeners in, let me suggest you try Rio Grande cracked gasoline. See your nearest independent Rio Grande dealer tomorrow. Tonight we take pleasure in presenting Captain John J. McGrath, Chief of Detectives of the Phoenix Police Department, Captain McGrath.
Good evening. Tonight's ramification of calling all cars is a very good illustration of the reasons why three-time loser law was put into effect. It used to be that a criminal could go out and commit a crime, and if was caught, serve the sentence prescribed by law, therefore walk out of prison, resume his criminal activities at will. And knowing this, they figured that crime as a career was a good living, even there short interruptions of 6 months or a year in jail. But three-time loser law puts away different perspective of the situation. When a man has caught a convicted and the judge learns that it is his third offense, that man goes to Folsom, and he goes for life. He knows when he goes that he has no chance of a parole. If this law had been in effect when the chief criminal in tonight's story became his operation, a great deal of time and money would have been saved.
Burglary by Bakersfield, Sutter County, Shasta County, San Joaquin County, and Utah Police. Committed and released from state penitentiaries in Omaha and Milwaukee. From Folsom and McNeil's Island for robbery and receiving stolen property. Returned to McNeil's Island in 1920 for post office robberies at Anderson and Ripon, California. Released in 1923 and 3 months later sent to Utah State Penitentiary for receiving stolen property. Such is the record of 31-year-old one-eyed John Fagatti, when in the spring of 1927 he dropped off a freight train to find himself in Glendale, Arizona. Badly in need of some food after the long, cold boxcar journey, his first stop is a small, greasy spoon restaurant.
Ham and eggs, a pair, straight up on the edge, third a ham to a warm kitchen.
Yes, sir, what'll it be?
cup of coffee to start with.
One cup of Java. Coming up.
Hey, Eddie, how about a little service over here?
Be right with you.
There you are, Missy.
Thanks.
You figured out what you want to eat yet?
Yeah, give me a waffle and a couple of strips of bacon out of there.
Two strips of bacon with a waffle under them.
Make that bacon crisp, will you?
Find the pig. That all you want?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, fella. Why don't you come in?
Just now, with the chance of a little food.
Sure. What'll it be? Same old thing?
No, not tonight. I think I'll have a little of your lamb stew for a change and coffee.
Okay. Cook's revenge on the dinner.
Hey,
how
about it? Will
I get a little service
tonight?
Okay, George. Sorry to keep you
waiting.
What can I do for you?
Mind if I look at some of that paper then?
Huh?
Oh, sure. Here. Yeah, thanks. They're making it hot for the bootleggers around here. There's a couple of fellas got a year apiece today.
Well, for bootlegging?
Yeah. Boy, can you imagine spending a year in jail for something like that?
Anybody that's dumb enough to turn to bootlegging ought to be sent up.
What do you mean?
There's no big dough in that racket.
Oh, I don't know about that. Seems to me there's plenty.
No real dough.
I don't know what you call real dough, but I'd like to have what some of the big ones have made this last couple of years.
I can make more than those guys ever saw in 6 months. And I don't have to peddle liquor to do it.
Huh? Oh.
That's my business.
Oh, sure. That doesn't mean to get personal.
That's all right. Just forget it.
Here you are. Waffle and bacon with a bacon crisp.
How's my stew coming?
Oh, yeah, I'll look into that. I'll have it here in a second.
What does the guy do around here for excitement?
Oh, a little of everything. Mostly play pool down at the pool hall.
Pool, huh? Yeah, I haven't shot any pool for a long time.
Well, I'm going down there tonight as soon as I finish eating. Why don't you drop in for a game?
Oh, that is, if you want to. Yeah, I might do it at that.
Yeah, if you want to, you can go down with me. I'll be through here about the same time you are.
Okay, sounds swell. I don't know nobody here in town. Just got in. I kind of go for a quick game of rotation.
Oh, fine, didn't I? As soon as we get through, we'll go over there.
Ah, here you are. Cook's revenge, right out of the family stew bowl. Cook to perfection and a whole lot of things I can't think of right now.
Later, John Fogarty and his newfound companion, whose name he learns is Stanley Borofsky, walk into a small pool hall, engage in a round of rotation. During the game, Fogarty seizes every opportunity to strengthen his friendship for Borofsky. And at the end of the third game, when Borofsky suggests it is time for him to go home, Fogarty suggests they have a drink together first. And a short time later, the two men stand before the bar of a tiny speakeasy.
Well, here's how.
Yep, right.
not bad for what it is.
Yeah, it's the best place in town.
Hey, you lived here and been there long?
Yeah, just long enough to know the town fairly well.
You work somewhere?
No. At the moment, I'm what you might call out of a job.
Oh. Well, that makes two of us. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah? What's your business?
My business?
Yeah. What do you do when you're working?
Well, I guess you might call me an explosives expert. That is, if you have to call me anything.
An explosives expert.
Yeah.
I guess I don't follow you. You mean you go around blowing things up?
Look, suppose we just skip the whole thing. You know, let it drop.
You're a funny sort of fella. First you make a crack about money over the restaurant tonight, and then when I ask you what you mean, you freeze up. Now you do the same thing all over again.
You still remember that remark about dough I made, huh?
Sure, I do. As a matter of fact, I'd like to know what you meant by it. I'm sort of curious that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if you told me your business, we could talk better, Mr. Borofsky, eh?
Well, no.
Yeah, you see? You want me to spill all about myself, but with you, it's different.
Oh, no, not exactly.
Don't want to talk in this place, is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Well?
See, look, I got a room up a little hotel. How would it be if we went over there?
Jake with me.
Oh, good. I don't know just why, but I got a feeling that bumping into each other the way we did was a piece of luck.
Check. I got the same idea.
Yeah, come on, man. Let's go out of here and go where we can talk without people.
And a few minutes later in his hotel room, Stanley Borofsky, 29-year-old Russian, listens with growing amazement as Fogarty unfolds his ideas on how to make big money without having to sell liquor.
It's as simple as that.
All you got to do is be careful and take your time planning the job. Then when you're all set, walk in and crack it.
Yeah, but isn't cracking a safe a pretty hard thing to do?
Nah. I tell you, I can blow the door off one of them and it won't even bust anything. Just open the door and that's all.
Yeah, sounds easy, but I don't know. Never heard of anything like it before.
Yeah, that's because you're green. I'm telling you, there's no one in the country that knows more about soup and how to use it than me, Johnny Zagatti.
You know, it's funny how I just figured you out tonight. All of a sudden, I knew we were going to get together. It was, well, just like that.
Yeah? Only we're not together yet. How do I know you'll go through with a job with me, huh? I don't know anything about you.
Ah, listen, don't worry about me. I won't let you down. I'm not quite as green as you think.
You ever been in jail?
No.
That helps. No busybody coppers liable to spot you then.
Sure, and I'm willing to take orders, too, up to a point.
I don't know why, but I think you're all right. Suppose we get some sleep, and tomorrow we'll talk some more about it, eh? I got an idea that maybe you and me can make a nice bit of dough. But first, I gotta be sure. About you, I mean.
And apparently, Borofsky convinces Zagatti of his sincerity. For a month later, in a small shack on the outskirts of Phoenix, Arizona.
Now, here's the gag. I got a joint spotted that looks right. But we've got a little bit of casing to do on it before we crack it.
Okay. Where is it?
On the corner of 10th and McDowell. At the pay and take it store. They do good business. As I'm plenty wrong, there's a nice wad in that safe all the time.
Yeah, but how are we going to get in?
Well, I got that all figured. The cinch. The only thing we've got to watch out for are those merchant patrol guys. That's the first thing you got to do. Hang around until you find out how many of them there are and when they make their round.
Yeah, and how do I do that?
By using your eyes. Nobody's going to notice you if you're careful. And if they do, what do you think I got those deputy sheriff badges for, huh? All you got to do is flash your buzzer and say you're looking for someone.
Yeah, okay. I'll go over to town first thing in the morning.
That's the idea. While you're doing that, I'm going to see where I can get a little nitro and some fuse. That's all we need, the way I do things. Safe full of dough, little soup. My experience, and we'll be sitting pretty.
Accordingly, every day for the following week, Borofsky loiters near the pay and take it. Keeps an accurate check on the merchant patrolman's routine visits. While Zagatti secures the needed nitroglycerin and fuses. And at last, at 3 a.m., June 23rd, a large truck rolls to a stop in front of the store. Two men climb out, walk to the front door.
You got the stuff with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Keep an eye out while I give you this door.
A following morning, back in town, a puzzled store manager stands before the place where his safe should be. He puts two and two together and calls the police. And responding to the call, two detectives arrive. Listen to his story.
I tell you, Lieutenant, it's not possible. I saw that safe when I left here last night, and now this morning it's gone.
Obviously. Did you notice anything else wrong before you found the safe missing?
Nothing.
How about the doors, windows? They've been tampered with?
Well, I didn't open up myself, but if there had been anything like that, I'm sure the boy who did open would have told me.
Uh-huh. Where's that boy now?
Why, he's around here somewhere. Yes, that's him over there, by the cashier, he said.
I think we'd better have a talk with him, Ed.
You don't think one of my own men had anything to do with this, do you?
I wouldn't know. But it's a cinch that in order to carry that safe out of here, whoever did it will have to get in and out through something, a door or a window. And I can't figure anyone boosting a safe through a window, can you?
Well, now that you put it that way, I can't. No.
All right. Well, let's talk to that boy.
Jim?
Yes, sir?
Come over here a minute, will you?
Yes, sir. What is it?
Jim, these two gentlemen are detectives. They want to ask you a few things.
Why, okay. It's all right with me.
Jim, I understand you opened up this morning. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Did you notice anything unusual about any of the doors?
No, sir. That is... nothing except... Say, wait a minute. There was one thing. The front door seemed to be kind of loose on its hinges when I unlocked it.
Loose on the hinges, eh?
Yes, sir. Only I didn't think much about it at the time.
Come on, Ed. Let's take a look at that door. There's just a chance that we'll find some fingerprints. Then we'd better call the station and get a description of the safe and start the boys out looking for it.
Right.
Phoenix police start the job of locating one missing safe, hope to find some clue as to the identity of the burglar. And 2 hours after his description of the safe is phoned to headquarters, the phone in the burglar detail comes to life.
Burglary detail, Wade speaking.
Wade, north. I think we found the missing safe.
Is that right? Where?
Out near the old schoolhouse.
Good enough. All right, Norris. You stay there and we'll get out as fast as possible. Don't let anyone touch it. Might get some fingerprints.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Informed of the discovery, Chief of Detectives John J. McGrath, accompanied by Wade and Detective Eddie Moore, rush to the canal bank. Make a complete examination of the blown safe. But after a minute inspection, they find that there are no fingerprints. No clues of any sort that might help identify the criminals. The only thing they do agree upon is that this is the work of an expert. Accordingly, returning to headquarters, McGrath notifies all patrolmen to keep a sharp lookout for the suspicious characters, gives orders to his men to round up all known petty racketeers in the city, try to learn if any newcomers are in town. But after 2 weeks of extensive investigation, the police find themselves with nothing to go on, no lead at all to the criminals. It is 2:30 in the morning, July 20th. 1 month after the pay-and-take-it robbery. In a small office located in the Sun Mercantile Company at 616 South 7th Avenue, two men converse in low tones, listen to the high whine of an electric drill.
How is it? All right. Get through in a second.
You got the crack soaked?
Yeah, off at the top where you're working.
Okay.
You know, I got to laugh, and I think I'll be fooling the cops in this town. That crack in the papers last week about the pay-and-take-it job haven't been done by a gang of eastern safe blowers. And about the police being convinced they'd left town.
Yeah, we got them up a tree, all right. There she goes. Now, take this drill. Now, Loader.
Yeah, okay.
I got it. Careful of that water on the floor. Don't get the cord in it or we'll short the works.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
Here you are. Okay. Now we pour in a little. Like this. Not too much.
The office again.
Hey, will you look at that? I thought you said you soaked the
too much. Through the door, clear through the skylight.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah, grab all the dough you can and let's get and move on. That crash will bring every cop in town on the run inside of 5 minutes.
I've got all I can stuff in my pocket.
Okay, come on, let's go.
Rushing out of side door onto Hadley Street, the Gotti and Borofsky avoid the first arrivals by a scant matter of seconds. Down to the Santa Fe train yards they run, where they bury the money, as well as the deputy sheriff's badges and their guns. Then from there, they detour around the central town and at last reach their hideout. Apparently, despite the slip-up, the job has turned out all right. But 2 days later, in Chief McGrath's office...
Now, listen, boys. This may be a wild goose chase, but it's worth it. I got a tip there were a couple of men living out in that shack just outside the city limits. You know, Maud's place?
Oh, yes, we know the place.
Now, here's the idea. We go out there, and we look the place over. If the men are there, we walk in and grab them.
What do we grab them on?
Suspicion of robbery. Of course, they may not have had anything to do with the jobs, but it's worth trying.
Sounds good to me, Chief.
Good. Now, when we get there, here's the routine. You go to the front door, Wade, and the more you go to the right side.
Okay.
Frontier is to the left. We'll take charge of the back. They'll probably be in the kitchen.
To see that safe door fly through the air, Maud. It was terrific.
Man, you boys are going to get in trouble someday. You're too smart for your own good.
That's a hot one, eh, Johnny? Maudie's just got to tell us how to do a job.
Yeah. The cops in this place don't even know we exist.
Yeah.
By this time, they'll be talking about Eastern gangsters and a lot of hooey like that. I tell you, we got things down pat.
Sure. Until they put you away for a while.
They ain't going to put this boy away for any while. Because I'd let him have it before I got to go with him. What do you think of that, huh?
I think you're talking big.
Yeah? How about you, Borofsky? Did you let him pick you up without making a show, huh?
Yeah, but I'll say I wouldn't.
All I can say is you boys think you're pretty hot. But I've seen hot ones before. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And you guys are real...
What's that?
All right.
Oh.
You
come on.
Stay where you are.
Get your hands up.
I will.
You'll shoot both of it.
Come on, boys. Frisky, too.
What's the idea of butting in like that? We ain't done nothing,
David. Any talking you want to do can be done.
Yeah, but we ain't done nothing.
You boys are still pretty sloppy cracksmen.
What do you mean, sloppy?
Just what I said. Clumsy, sloppy. You don't know how to super safe, right?
Oh, yeah? Well, Johnny, here's the best safe crack in the country. If it hadn't been for...
Oh, shut up, you clumsy fool.
Well. So we hurt the boy's feelings and he spills all over the place.
Well, you can't fit anything on me for that.
Maybe not. But I have an idea your pal here will talk more after he's away from you. How about it?
All right. I don't know anything about it.
About what?
How about those jobs?
About anything. I can see that. Come on, get moving. We'll make you talk more about this at the station.
And after interrogating Borofsky for less than an hour, Chief McGrath has him sent back to the jail. Brings in Pagotti. Tell him the man eyes him. Then...
Well, what, Pagotti?
How do you know my name?
And your friend Borofsky told me. That and a lot more.
What do you mean by that crack?
Simply that I know all about you two.
You mean to tell me that guy squealed on me?
I didn't say that, only he talked.
Why, that lousy stool pigeon. And I showed him how to make some dough. I'm the guy that took him out of the small time. So what does he do for me? He squawks his head off. And what can I do for him when I see him, huh? I'll put him somewhere where he can't get a chance to squeal on anybody else.
It's all right with me, Pagotti. But there's one hitch to your plan.
Yeah?
You're not going to see him because I'm sending you up for a nice long stretch for those two jobs you pulled. And if you've got any idea that you're going to get out of it, just forget it. Because you're going right where you belong. Florence Penitentiary.
September of the same year, John Pagotti and Stanley Borofsky were sentenced to from 2 to 10 years in the Florence Penitentiary. Pagotti escaped from the there in 1929, but his liberty was short, and he was returned in less than a month. Released on parole a year later, he lost no time in returning to his old habits, and in 1930 was arrested in Miami after being shot during an attempted robbery. Borofsky was also paroled, but he had learned his lesson and is now living his respectable life somewhere in the Midwest.
Thank you, Captain McGrath. Independent Rio Grande dealers had a good year in 1936. From all over the Rio Grande territory, reports show sales increases for both Rio Grande cracked gasoline and Sinclair motor oil. And the new year has started off most favorably. For all this, the Rio Grande Oil Company is grateful to you Calling All Cars fans who have shown your loyalty to the dealers making these broadcasts possible. We hope you will continue to derive pleasure from Calling All Cars broadcasts. And we hope you will continue to derive increased motoring satisfaction from the products the Rio Grande dealers. Rio Grande Craft, the gasoline of police car performance, Sinclair Pennsylvania Motor Oil, and Sinclair Opaline, two thoroughly de-waxed, de-jellied lubricating oils. Both refinery sealed in tamper-proof cans. Why not tell your friends about these superior products? We hope, too, you will continue to be entertained by Calling All Cars News, that bright, newsy publication so full of screen and radio gossip, detective stories, and other special features. It's about time for a new issue. Keep in touch with your independent Rio Grande dealer.
Phoenix Police calling all cars, attention all cars, a cancellation broadcast 166 regarding safe robberies. Suspects this case now in custody. That's all.
Bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.